Well, good afternoon and welcome. Thank you for attending. I'm Bob Bermucci. I am the Vice Chancellor of Technology and Learning Services for South Orange County Community College District. This is about Sherpa. Now, would you turn that down a little bit? If you look at this picture on the left-hand side there, Sir Edmund Hillary, credited often in the past as the first person to climb Mount Everest. There on the right was somebody with him all the way, Tenzing Norgay, a Sherpa. And we like the analogy of Sherpa as someone or some service that helps other people to reach heights that they couldn't have reached alone, but is content to remain in the background. First, a little bit about our district. This is our front yard, I guess, because we are a community college district in Southern California, Southern Orange County, the OC, and we have two colleges. Together they have about 43,000 students. So this is going to be the overview of what we're talking about, and that's great. So in our district, we are in an area that includes part of, say, Newport Beach, if you ever used to watch the OC on TV and stuff. And so where people, their spending on plastic surgery is only outshone by their spending on their automobiles. So we have this history of building things in-house, and people kind of got spoiled to do that. Some of the things that we built in the past were MAP, My Academic Plan, which is a planning tool that allows students, for example, to say, I want to go to University of California, Irvine. I want to major in electrical engineering. And we're actually pulling in data feeds from the CSU and the UC systems so that they'll never need to take a course that is not going to transfer. And we allow them to what if and make as many of these plans as you want to. And since we roll that out, we've had over 70,000 of these plans taken. We also made our own student information system, which was kind of a crazy thing to do. But rather than going out there with SunGuard Banner or DataTel or PeopleSoft, we said we want to do that ourselves, mostly because once we're done, we have the keys to the entire car. We can open up the hood. We can get into the engine. And we can connect with extra layers of services in a way that's just not possible if you have these vendor products. So we built the SIS. Now, what we're going to be talking about today is recommendation engines. And I started with just a question is, how come all the websites that I use that aren't related to work are so much cooler than the ones that I use at work? You go out and look at the best of the internet, it's as if you had built a time machine and hopped in it and gone 5 years into the future. And so we decided to build a time machine, and of course that project failed, as far as you know. But when I go to Amazon, it says, oh, welcome back, Bob. I mean, we know you're a geek. William Gibson has a new novel out. I go to Netflix. And, you know, they paid an extra $1 million prize recently to improve the quality of their recommendation engines. I've rated over 1,000 movies, and it says, Bob, I noticed that you watched Pretty Woman. Based on that, perhaps you would like to see more movies about prostitution. It actually did that. So it's not perfect, but Pandora, you know, how many of you use Pandora radio or something else, you know, Grooveshark or Spotify or something like that? You have your own custom radio station. How come all these services I use know me as an individual, and yet the systems that I'm interacting with, if you take a Blackboard class and that one ends and you start another Blackboard class, it's as if Blackboard is somebody with hippocampal damage that has, you know, severe amnesia. You know, it's never seen you before, other than knowing that you have an account in the system. So the systems outside learn about you, but the systems typically in academia do not. So we set out to try to build a recommendation engine, and we did this in layers. We have to be pragmatic, because typically we were able to get some funding because of our track record of previous development. But in something like this, we'll divide it into layers, and we will tackle what we call the low-hanging fruit first. You need something that's going to have a pretty sure chance of success, and you know it's going to bring you the return on investment, and that kind of takes the heat off of you, so that with every layer, we're trying to do something a little bit more innovative. And we're up in, we deployed two layers, and we've got the third one in our Agile sprints, and we're already planning on our fourth one, and now things are just starting to really get good. So what Sherpa is going to do is to recommend courses, services, and information to students. And so you can see what this thing does instead of me just talking about it. I want to turn it over to my partner, Jim Gaston. Now Jim went to the keynote this morning. This was a great sacrifice on his part because he's a surfer. And normally he gets up at the crack of dawn and goes out and baits sharks before he comes in. And you know, I'm not a surfer. I don't understand it myself. But I think I figure out why he does it. If you go out in the morning when it's dark and you impersonate a seal over a great number of great white sharks, and you come back to shore with all of your limbs intact, then by default, it's going to be a good day the rest of the day. Well, he had to get up and come to the keynote today, so I'm hoping that you will be able to help him this day be a good day since he didn't get his surfing in. So, Jim.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. And yes, that is a good day when you come back surfing with all of your limbs. And in fact, there was the guy who got me into surfing. I said, so how do you avoid shark attacks? And he said, just don't look like a seal. And then I realized later, it's not so much that; it's just you need to look less like a seal than anyone else out there. So that's been my strategy so far. So before I get into the demo, let me just give you a little sense of the architecture and what it is that we're trying to do here. And so we know that there's some information we know about our students. Some of that information we derive just out of our normal student system, just like any of you do. We have things like the GPA. We have their transcript. We know what their educational goal is. Some various things like that. Another source of information we want to start tapping into is also their behavior. What are the classes they tried to get into last time? How quickly do they register based on their appointment time? What were their assessment scores? How many times did they have to take that? There's some information we can derive not just from the raw data elements that we're traditionally think of associated with a student information system. We think there's some things we can derive from their actual behavior. And so we all know that we've always had this batch of information about a student. We also know that there's some recommendations that we as an institution can make to those students in order for them to be successful. And that's what Sherpa is really all about, is student success. And if you saw a lot of the news reports that came out this week, in higher education, we're not doing such a hot job on that. The California Community College, is roughly 1 out of 4 students goes on and achieves the goal that they originally state that they had. Just in California alone, California Community College has spent about $500 million last year investing in students who did not continue on. That's not a really great track record, and that's really exactly at the core of what we're trying to do with Sherpa. We know that there are certain courses that will help students be successful. We know there are services they can avail themselves of that will help them be successful. And in some cases, there might just be a piece of information that, if they knew it, would help them be successful. For example, our state chancellor's office came out with a report that characterized successful students versus non-successful. And some of the information in that report was the kind of things you would expect, you know, their ability to do college-level math and English and things like that. But there were also some other interesting things. For instance, if they take less than 20 academic units in their first year, they're more likely to fail. If they register for their classes within 1 week of their appointment time, they're more likely to succeed. That's information we have, and so shouldn't we let students know that? When a student exits our registration system their second semester, if they've enrolled in less than 20 academic units, wouldn't that be a really helpful piece of information? I'd certainly want to know that I am currently making a sequence of decisions that lead to a pattern of failure based on the data that we know. Now, we're not going to stop them. We're not going to force them to take 20 units, of course, but we can at least provide that information and help them to make more successful decisions. There's also triggers. There's the timing. We don't want to just inundate people with a load of information. We want to provide that information at just the right time and in just the consumable format that it's going to be used most effectively for that student. That might be timing. It might be based on a date. That date could be absolute or relative. It could be a hard date. It could be 3 days before their registration appointment. They should know the following information. It could be triggered by an event. Maybe it's when grades come in, or maybe it's when they have succeeded in a series of steps that they need to go through for orientation and advisement. So between that, if we take what we know about the student, if we take the suite of services that we can provide to that student, combine it with the event, then we create what we call a nudge. And we name that very specifically because that's exactly what it is. We're not going to force anybody to do anything. We're not going to put them in a box. A community college, we are open access. Just about anybody can come in. And so we're not going to stop anybody from doing anything. But if we can nudge them toward making a really good decision, then they're more likely to be successful than not. And again, that's what Sherpa is all about. So how is this nudge going to be delivered? I'm going to demonstrate a few ways that we've already done, and there's a few other areas that we're just talking about. The obvious one is our portal, and I'll be demonstrating that for you today. We're also going to create it in a personalized RSS feed that will be personalized to that individual student that then they can use any device or gadget or widget that can consume an RSS feed, whether it's a mobile device, a web browser, iGoogle, MyYahoo, any site like that. We're also going to allow emails to be sent out, text messages to be delivered directly to their mobile devices. We're going to be creating a Facebook app, so when they log into Facebook, we'll query Sherpa and we'll let them know what are the most important things, the most important services, maybe make some course recommendations, because we want to get this information out to where they are. We don't want to expect a demand that they come to us for it. And then lastly, we're also looking at mobile. We're a client of Blackboard Mobile. We're going to be rolling out our app in the spring, and we're going to be expanding that using their SDK to include a module for Sherpa. So right on their device at any time, they're going to be able to pull up these recommendations. And a really key part of this, and Bob will be talking about this again in a little bit, is the feedback. Every time we push a nudge out to a student, there's things we want to know about it. One is just the ratings. Every nudge can be rated on a scale of 1 to 5, so that if the institution has thought, this is a piece of information that should be really important to you, and we determined through the statistics that 87% of the people we delivered it to gave it a score of 1 out of 5, then Sherpa will automatically start to lower that in the priority. So it will actually learn from the behavior of the students. We'll also set up preferences, so students can tell us things. For instance, when we recommend classes, if they have certain times of their schedule that they don't want to take classes, maybe they've got a job or something, then we'll just automatically not show them classes that meet during that time period. Those are preferences that they'll control. The nudges will also come out in various channels, and we'll automatically assign them to channels based on their profile, but we'll allow them to subscribe or unsubscribe to any information they're interested in. And again, we'll learn from that information. So here's some examples. For instance, in the California Community Colleges, a new student has to go through something called matriculation. It's a series of steps that are supposed to help them succeed, and there's some things like orientation and advisement that they have to go through. So a student who meets that profile might get a link to the online orientation program, and once they successfully complete that, it'll just go away. If a GPA comes in high, then maybe they'll get a link to the honors program. If it comes in low, then they might get a link to the tutoring program or maybe some recommended courses that are designed to help them learn how to be a successful college student and so on. We can also nudge them toward helping Sherpa, because the more information we know about them, the more precise our recommendations can be. Bob mentioned earlier we have a program called MAP, My Academic Plan. It's our academic planning tool. It's a huge treasure trove of information that if a student has gone in and created an academic plan, now we know precisely what they intend to do, and we know which courses they're interested in. And that's a huge amount of information. So if a student hasn't gone into MAP yet and it's not required, then they would get a nudge to go in ahead and use MAP, and then the subsequent nudges will be much better informed. And as I mentioned before, the whole focus of this is really on student success. It's not about using fancy technology. Some of the technology we're using is not that complicated, but it's really all about helping students succeed. So that's enough talking about this. Now I'm going to go into a demonstration, and there's several options here for the demonstration, so I'm going to take a vote. I can show you static screenshots that I pulled off. I can show you a Camtasia video, or I can actually do a live demonstration of the system. So how many people want the screenshots? Screenshots, really exciting screenshots, because they never move. They just sit right there. And they never crash either. So how about the Camtasia video? Because that moves and it's fancy and it's consistent, and every time I run it, it does exactly the same. How many people want the... Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. How many people would like the live demonstration? That's what I thought. So that's what we're going to do. And actually, when I come to EDUCAUSE, I get so sick of people just showing me screenshots of stuff. It's like, okay, if you built a system... show it to us, right? I mean, I understand there's a little nervousness here. And, of course, by saying that, we know exactly what's going to happen as soon as I try to log in here. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to log in. This is my site. This is our enterprise web portal. We've had it online since August of 2000. We've upgraded it a couple of times. And this is a homegrown web portal that we built a number of years ago. It has all the typical web parts and all that, and I'll be talking about this a little more. So I'm logged in here now as me. And I have access to the Sherpa engine. So I'm going to show you what we have right now. And we are fairly early in the implementation of this. As Bob mentioned, we've rolled out several phases of this. We, at the beginning of this year, we finished up about a 3.5 to 4 year process to completely redevelop our student system from scratch. That was a success. We actually came in on time and within the original budget, and that has given us the platform now to do some fairly exciting things. It's also created a user community that's a little skittish about a lot of change, because any of you that have gone through something like that know that there's a lot of change associated with it. So we're rolling out Sherpa in very small consumable chunks, one of which actually just rolled out yesterday. We added some new enhancements to it that have only been out there for a day, and I'm going to be showing those to you. So this is the Sherpa dashboard. Only a few people in the district can get into this. And we're going to go into the profile first. And this is where I can go in, and I can create a description of a student, a set of students based on a set of attributes. And here are some that have already been defined. Right now, we haven't been getting very granular with this. These are fairly broad categories right now, as you can see. We have IVC faculty, IVC staff, IVC students. IVC is one of our two colleges. But we're going to start training the staff on how to get much more specific. So in this case, I'm going to go in. See, now you're on to me. It remembered that I've obviously already tested this, so hopefully it'll continue to work. So I'm going to create this profile name, and I just give it a name. I'm going to call this one Honors Transfer, because I want to describe students that are part of our honors program and they're planning on transferring. And that's a set of students that I want to provide course recommendations or service or information to. There's two different types of profiles, student and faculty and staff. Student just allows me, we have a much richer set of data with students because Sherpa is primarily focused on students right now, though we plan on also having it direct nudges toward faculty as well, which could also just be some reminders. And now I describe a set of attributes. And here's some information. I set the resolution low so you can see this. So let me get that menu out of the way. So here's a set of attributes I can select from. This is a relatively small subset right now, but we're going to be adding more and more to this as we talk to the college community and find out what are the types of things they're interested in. So I'm going to go ahead and pick the honors program. And then based on that attribute, it gives me the opportunity to set the Boolean operator and then some values for that. So I'm going to go ahead and say if their honors flag equals yes, and if their educational goal equals that they want to obtain a bachelor's degree after their associate's degree. So they're going to transfer on after they get an AA degree at our colleges. Now, that particular attribute that I selected is a term-based piece of data. We collect that every semester. And so the system understands that and then prompts me for which semester I want to look at. I can hard code this to a specific semester if I want to follow a cohort of students who had that attribute at one specific semester, or I can just say the current term. So any student at the term at the time I deliver the nudge, it will look for that attribute. So I'll say the current term, and I'm all done. This is a simple one, and I just added a couple attributes to that. And now this is going to show me, if I want to right now, I can associate some existing nudges to that profile, but I'm going to do that in just a second. So I'll go ahead and save that. Now that's all I have to do. I just did that once. I've defined that now, and that's a profile now that will exist in our system. So now I go out here to the nudges, and here's a list of existing nudges, but I'm going to go ahead and create a new one. And we'll go ahead and call this demo. If somebody could remind me not to actually save this, because we are in a live system, so I don't want a bunch of weird things to go out. Here's the profile that I just set up, so I can select one or more profiles that I want to send this nudge to. And for now, there's only a limited amount of information that we're going to provide into this nudge. But this is where we're building. We use an agile software methodology called Scrum that are broken up into 3-week sprints. And so our current sprint, we're adding some functionality to this. To the next sprint, we're going to be adding the number of ways nudges can be delivered. Right now, nudges can only be delivered through our portal. But within about a few weeks, we're also going to be sending out emails and text messages, and then we're also going to be looking at a Facebook app and a mobile device as well. So I have two choices on the content type right now, text or an RSS. Text, I'm actually just going to type the text in right here. If I already have an external RSS feed that I want to tap into, then all I have to do is enter the URL for that RSS feed. Sherpa will go out, grab that RSS feed, and pull that in as a nudge that can be delivered to whoever I said it should be. So the header, I'll just say demo, and in the text, I'll say this is an announcement. Exciting stuff. And again, it uses the full WYSIWYG editor, so if I want to add some things to this. We're also going to add the ability to include video clips. So for instance, maybe I'm a brand new student, and I get a video clip delivered to me that explains to me the process by which I enroll in classes, or a welcome from the college president, or any number of things we want to create here. One of the things I've neglected to mention in the architecture is we don't see Sherpa as necessarily a service. What we see it is really as an architecture or a platform that once we get a few more things on here, we're going to go out into our college community, have this ready to go, and say, okay, what is it that you want to tell students? What is the most important thing? And then describe that student to us. We'll build a profile based on what they say, and then we'll train them in how to deliver these nudges. I was reading an article last night about Google TV. And Google TV sounds like a really interesting idea, and the head of Google TV said, what's the coolest thing about Google TV is they have no idea what the coolest thing about Google TV is going to be because they're building a platform, and it's going to have an app store just like Android or just like the iPhone. And that's exactly kind of how we see Sherpa. I have no idea how some of our people are going to use this, but even in its relative infancy, we're already getting people excited. We've gone around a number of our groups. I called it the Sherpa Palooza Tour, where we went around and did this demo for a number of different groups to show them what's coming. I just got an email yesterday from a group saying, we want you to come in and show that to our staff because we have some ideas on how we want to use this. And that group is not our biggest fan when it comes to some of the other things that we've done. So that was actually pretty exciting to see that. So as you can see, we've broken this up into who the nudge should go to, what is the nudge, what's the content, and now how and when. How currently is just as a my site announcement, but here's where we're going to be adding the other capabilities. And now when. We can set the timing, remember that trigger in the original architecture diagram, can be absolute or it can be relative. If it's absolute, then I just pick a specific date on when I want the announcement to appear and then when I want the announcement to disappear. But this is where it can start getting really powerful. I can also set a relative date and set this up once, and it can become a recurring event every semester. So I can specify which semester it should go into. And let's say I want this announcement to appear 3 days before that student's individual registration appointment time, and then I want it to go away 5 days after. So now this isn't going to be a generic announcement that's going to appear for everybody, because I don't know about you, but our registration process, our appointment time, runs about 4 to 5 weeks. So if we post an announcement, say it's your registration appointment time, get ready, but my personal appointment time isn't for 5 weeks from now, that information really isn't all that relevant to me. But now we can pin this specifically to the student. Soon we'll be able to have an email go out directly to that student. And as we learn from this, as we find out what's effective and what's not, we'll start adding more and more attributes. What I'm particularly interested in is finding the negative attributes. Who are the students who didn't register and their appointment time has already arrived? That would be a great nudge to send out saying, hey, you know, your registration appointment time was 3 days ago. Your classes are filling fast. We looked into your academic plan, and we saw that you plan on transferring to UC Berkeley as a biology major. We searched the class schedule. We found a set of courses you said you were interested in. Based on the pattern of classes that you've taken in the past, here are the 4 classes we think you're going to be most interested in. We've already screened them for prereqs. They don't have a time conflict with when you said you were going to work. And one of them is your favorite instructor, right? That's the kind of direction that we want to head with this, to be able to provide students that level of detail and that level of information. So this is kind of the back end part of it. That's what the person who goes in, we actually refer to this page lovingly as the nudge-o-matic. So this is where they go in because it slices and dices, and this is where they can go in and add that information. So what does it look like for a student? I'm going to log in here now as, and again, this is our live production system. This is actually is my daughter's account. I have her permission to log in here. I promised I wouldn't look at the transcript while I was in here. But, pardon me? Yes. Oh, good point. But I have her permission, so it's okay. And I promised I wouldn't look at the transcript, but if I were to look away and somebody were to come up here and click on that, no, I won't do that. So there are actually two things right on this page that are part of Sherpa. One is this announcement, and again, the announcements right now are fairly general, but we're going to start making them more and more focused. We've also made this much more flexible now. I don't know about in your portal, but in ours, a lot of people post these big, long, hairy announcements, and it pushes everything else down below the fold, and nobody reads it. And so now we're clipping these off at 200 characters, and if the student's interested, they can click on more, and it'll expand out. If they want to collapse everything down and just get a glance and see what's available down there, and then just get the details on the individual announcement, they can do that. So we've made it a little more flexible. And what we're really excited about, and when we showed this to the students, what they were especially excited about is this calendar part. This is just went live yesterday. It's a very soft rollout. The students, most students, a vast majority of students don't even know it's there. They have to know to go in and add it. So we're going to roll it out carefully. But what this does is it preloads, because when we talked to the students and when we looked at the nudges, the types of nudges, so many of them were very date and time specific. So we surveyed our students. We had a number of focus groups. When they talked about our portal, the theme we kept hearing about is don't waste space in here for stuff we can get elsewhere. We know what the weather is like. We can get news anywhere else. We have all these other things. Why are you taking up really valuable space in my site with that information? So we acted on that, and we said, well, how would you want to see that information? And they said, what if you loaded up a calendar? And so that's what we did. We've got this calendar control. It preloads it with their class schedule. They can view it any number of ways. They can view it in a month view, a week view, or a day view. They can also show it as a list. So if they don't want to see it in a grid format, they can do that. They can come down here, and they can actually export an entire semester's worth of events into an ICS file, and then load that into Google Calendar or Yahoo Calendar or Outlook or anything like that, so that if they want to just use this in conjunction with their own personal one. So this is how we rolled it out now. It preloads their class schedule. The next step is if there's an event that we know is really important to them. So, for instance, if I'm a transfer student and we're having a transfer fair out in the quad, then that information is automatically going to appear not just in the announcements, but right in the calendar. My registration appointment for next semester is going to show up. If I have an appointment with a counselor or any number of event, date and time specific nudges, then those will appear in the calendar. As we get more and more of these, one of the things we're going to be doing is we're going to be breaking these up into channels. And so the channel is just as a way to aggregate a set of nudges. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to tap into Blackboard, and we're going to pull out the Blackboard announcements, the due dates, the assignments. If that student is enrolled in a class where the instructor is using Blackboard, we want to pull all of that information out. So essentially what we're doing is we're aggregating, we're pulling together all the information that we think is relevant to the student. We deliver it to them in a way that's prioritized based on the rules that are built into Sherpa, and then the student can decide what to do. If they want to subscribe and unsubscribe to different channels, they can do that. We're also going to be engineering in social networking here, so students will be able to comment on nudges. They'll be able to eventually produce their own nudges. If a student doesn't want to see any of that information, they can filter it out. But if they want to engage in a dialogue, and imagine the helpfulness of a generation now that has grown up with Facebook, if we put a nudge out there that talks about the transfer center and somebody gets in there and says, oh, yeah, make sure you do the following things. Or we have a channel based around geology, and there's a geology club, and they can share some information about geology or swap textbooks or any number of things to really kind of start tapping into that. Again, that's where we get to Sherpa as a platform or an architecture rather than a specific service. We want to tap into that crowd and see if there's other useful information that they can put in there. We don't want to assume that only the institution has useful information. We want to open this up to our students so that they can also partake in that. So that's what the homepage looks like. Now let me show you a very specific service where Sherpa is going to help students actually find classes that they're looking for. So here's our registration system. This is what we call our schedule builder page. This page drives me nuts. It's always bothered me since we built this, because it probably does exactly what yours does. This is where the student comes in. Our section IDs are called ticket numbers. So a student comes in here and types in a ticket number, and the class is closed or full. What does our system do? It says that class is closed or full. And then the system, with all its processing power, with its gigabytes of data, with its ability to search through large amounts of data and find very specific information, it sits there like an idiot and waits for the student to go and search and find a substitute. Does that make any sense whatsoever? It doesn't, right? But we're just kind of accustomed to that because most systems were built back in the day when a student walked up and handed a slip of paper across the counter and somebody else had to go and type it in, right? So here's what our system does now. So if I go in here, this is always an interesting one to do a live demo of because class statuses change so quickly. And EDUCAUSE could not have been planned at a worse time since fall is pretty much done. And oh, perfect. And spring registration hasn't started yet, but I had tested this earlier, and it looks like it's going to work. So now this is what we do. We don't just say that class is closed, good luck, come back to us when you've gone through all the work of finding a substitute. We're going to help them find a substitute. So what we did is we show them, here's the class you were trying to get into. Now we're going to give you a few options. Let me zoom in here a little bit so you can see that a little better. So we can show all open classes for this exact course. Are there other sections that do have an empty seat? That would be an easy guess, right? You were trying to get into this class. Are there other sections of the same course? We'll help you search for a similar class, or we'll just open up the search and you just tell us what you're looking for and we'll go find it. And again, they don't have to bounce back and forth before screens. They don't have to go to a printed schedule and flip vigorously through it while they hear that clock ticking and all those seats filling up during the peak registration periods. All of our nudges always give them the ability to rate it, again, on a scale of 1 to 5. Even this intro screen, I can come in here and I can let us know, hey, how did we do here? Of course, I'll give this a 5 out of 5. We actually did get our first feedback yesterday, and it was a 5 out of 5, so the entire team was very excited about that. Of course, they're sitting there doing the query probably about every 5 minutes to see how this is doing, so I didn't give them my daughter's student ID, so they'll probably get really excited about this. And we'll say, thanks for the help. You guys rock. Okay? And I can also submit this as text. And again, we are going to pay attention to this. Student feedback is why we built this in the first place, because we are listening to our students. So that's exactly what we're going to be doing here. Okay, so let's get back to finding a class. The first thing I'm going to check is show all open classes. Now, we wouldn't have even given them that as an option if we didn't know that there were open classes of the same course. We joke around on the Sherpa team about the Book of Sherpa, and the Book of Sherpa is the rules that we do not violate. Chapter 1, verse 1 of the Book of Sherpa is, Sherpa doesn't do anything stupid, okay? So we don't want to make a recommendation to a student, have them click on that and say, oh, sorry, there are no classes available that you were looking for. So we found 5 classes that are that have open seats. But here's where it gets really cool. Look what happens down here. These two have empty seats, but there's a time conflict with a class I'm already enrolled in. Rather than just gray out the add button, we're going to go ahead and give them the option, if they want to drop the class that they're in, and go ahead and enroll in this one. We're just not going to make that assumption. One of the students on our design team, after we showed him this, came up with this great idea. He said, rather than gray out the add button, why don't you make it a swap button? Right? That'll automatically drop the one that's causing the problem and add me into this one. Fantastic idea. It's something I never would have thought of. But again, it's the benefit of having students right with us along the way. So I look at this, I say, you know what? None of those look really good to me. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the next tab, which is similar classes. So I'm going to go out here and I'm going to say, what essentially we're asking for now is, okay, we're sorry you couldn't get into that class, but what was it about that class that you found attractive? Was it the same general day and time? Was it that it met certain transfer requirements? Was it the instructor that you liked? Was it the exact course? Do you want to look for a related subject? Do you want to restrict your search just to this college, or do you want to expand your search to both of our colleges? The location, and a number of other criteria that they can use. So I'm going to go ahead and search for the same general day and time, the same college, and I'm going to say only show me open classes because I don't want to worry about trying to add a class and have to bug the instructor. So I'll search. So it's going to go out there now, and it's going to do a search, and now it comes back with just one. Again, when I tested this right before the session started, there were two. So one of them just closed. So I look at that and go, you know what, that's not really a class I'm interested in. What else do you have for me? And now we just go into advanced search. And in this case now, we're just opening the whole thing up. We're not going to worry about the course you tried to get into. We gave it our best shot. Sorry, we can't help you with that. Just tell us what you're looking for. So I'm going to go in here. I can choose either of our two colleges. I can choose the status. I'm going to say only show me open classes. I can type in a keyword. I can type in an instructor's name. I can specify the location. I'm going to say on campus only. The length of the class. The transferability of the class. Do I want to go to CSU or CSU and UC? I can restrict the search to just courses I already told you I was interested in math. And I can also look at some different subjects. And if I want to pick a specific subject, I can do that. And then a day and time grid. So I can just go in here and I can say, okay, only show me open classes at Saddleback that meet on campus and meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I'm going to go out and do a search. Now, this one in all likelihood is going to come back with more results. So for performance sake, we're going to paginate through this. Up here in the tabs, it's going to show me how many classes were available under each set of criteria. And so I can jump back and forth. In this case, there were 54. I can scroll through these, or I can paginate through these and take a look at them. If I decide maybe I want to go back to similar, I even want to go back to same course, then I can do that. So again, now right now, this is only triggered by trying to enroll in a class that's closed. Our next step is to look at some of the other things that block a student. Maybe they haven't met the prerequisite. Okay, in that case, we ought to go out and search and find a course that they can get into that will help them meet the prerequisite to get into the original class. If a class is canceled, we ought to immediately go out and do the same kind of thing and come back and show them some alternatives. So this is just an example of the kind of thing that we want to be doing with Sherpa. Get that information right at the student's fingertips, right at the time that they need it most. And with that, I'm going to hand it back to Bob, and he'll wrap it up.
Okay. We're to the last mile of our presentation, so I want to talk about the last mile phenomenon when you're a software developer, and that is you get this cool stuff made, and you think just because you build it, they will come. And it ain't necessarily so. We have a strong focus on user experience engineering. I have some commandments for the programmers, and they're things like, number one is honor thy user, and number two is thou art not thy user. So being a programmer is a very rare thing. You're kind of a hyper-rational, well-trained person, and in the process of becoming that, you are no longer what you used to be before you became that. And our students, by and large, as I'm guessing yours are not hyper-rational, experienced people. So you get the problems where what makes perfect sense to a programmer doesn't make perfect sense to the student. Now, if you bring a programmer in, and my programming days are long behind me, but if I was programming and somebody showed me something and a student wasn't using it properly, then the answer is very simple. They're a moron. Because I developed something gorgeous and beautiful, and they need to get with the program. But what we do instead is to try to build in feedback loops everywhere with the software. So we send out surveys. You have a portal. Our portal gets millions of page views. And so why not leverage that? You can throw a survey of a few questions up on the portal, and you can get hundreds of answers to that within just a day. So we have different times. We ask different questions on there about things. We'll have drawings. We'll say, win an iPad or some, or iPod, because I'm too cheap for an iPad. And if you go and just show me which of these pages do you like better, A or B, and do an A-B test for a possible UI for a new function. Another thing we do is look at our web analytics. We're hooked up both with our data warehouse and because we use things like Google Analytics. Your analytics will tell you a lot of things about which pages you need to focus on or which things are working or not working. Just look at the page dwell times for individual pages. We do usability tests. I'm going to show you in a minute. As Jim said, we do a lot of focus groups, and we are building the loops into the system, as he showed you with the STAR system and the feedback, so that we're using crowdsourcing. So you put all these things together, and these things are never done. It's an evolutionary system. To give you an example of the usability, I want to show you. This is we use software called Moray from TechSmith, who's a vendor here, for our usability. And it's got a webcam and a microphone on them. And we give them, this is a card sort test. And so they turn over a card, and it says something like, buy the book for accounting 1A, this section in time. Then they have to go in and do that, and we're capturing everything they do on the screen, and we can see what their face is, and we're listening to everything they said while they're being told to use a TOL protocol. That's think out loud. Just say anything. It comes into your head. And then afterwards, the real beauty of this is the analytics. So you can run a very few number of subjects through this, about five, and if they all hit the same sticking point, then there's no debate about it. It's broken, and we know exactly the spot where it's broken. And when you come into this system in the back and you look at it, there are these analytics that shows us all kinds of metrics, like where the sticking points are. And so we can engineer those out of the product. So we're never having to guess whether it works or doesn't work or whatever. Everything's a database decision. So that brings us to the end of what we were going to talk about. So if you have any questions, we'll be glad to talk with you. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and by the way, we were told to repeat the question, which feels silly, but they're recording it. So the question is, Bob, how did you get to be so good looking?
Oh, yeah.
And so...
personnel evaluation coming up. Can you tell?
So the question had to do with the relative complexity of it. And maybe it's just because I look at what we're planning on doing, which is far more complex than this. So I appreciate the compliment as far as the relative complexity of it. But what we're planning on doing is something we're calling students like me, and we're going to be starting this up in a couple of months. And this is going to involve some really intensive processing. And what we're doing is we're mining our data warehouse to see if we can detect a pattern of success in students who moved on and transferred or got a degree or something like that. And if we can look at their behavior and then find students who are similar. So, for instance, of our hundreds of thousands of students that have passed through our institution, we have millions of pieces of information in our data warehouse. I had our data warehouse guru come up with just even a rudimentary idea here. So what I did is I passed in a student ID to something he's already built. It passes back to me a list of recommended courses that student took now and did so successfully. So if we can start to detect that kind of a pattern in their behavior and then tap that in. So if I've declared an intent to transfer onto Cal State Fullerton as a, architecture major, and now we can look at the track record of every similar student who did that and then derive from that some recommendations. Now we're talking about a whole nother layer of complexity, not just in doing it, but in validating it as well. Because we don't want to, we don't want Sherpa to ever make a recommendation that's not a good one. So maybe that's what I meant by simplicity, is because I'm already thinking about what we're planning on doing compared to what we've already done. Yeah,
in my mind, we're building this in layers, and we start with the layers that are going to be the easiest to implement. It has to be true criteria. It's easy to implement, and it actually means something. But once you get past that, see, that allows you to show that, the money that you got was well spent. You returned. And once people hit that kind of break-even point, we think, well, we got our money's worth out of this system. That's when the real fun begins, because that's when you can start doing some really speculative things. The next things we're planning on doing is so far, when I say it's simple, to me it means not that the architecture is simple. As you said, rightly, it's complex, but that the mathematics is simple. And we're getting up to the point where we're building our first predictive analytics layers into it. Now, I view the layers as channels. He didn't show you this, but we're revamping my site in other ways, and we'll have different channels that people can subscribe to. And there'll be different analytics channels. So, for example, if you're familiar with the Purdue Stoplight Project, that series of analytics, which is built on simple linear regression, can be just one channel in this. Now, to me, since my programming is are behind me, and as one of the executives in the district, aka head weasels, I feel a real sense of desperation in trying to prove that I am not a total waste of food to the team. So I subject them to rants constantly, and I'll give you a mini rant. It's, we should be at least as advanced as baseball. If you were to query people about the stereotypes of who's the smartest on your campus, my guess is that the jock stereotype wouldn't land at the top, right? Well, if you look right now, nothing that I can see that anybody in academia is doing even approaches the complexity of what is going on in Major League Baseball at this moment. Major League Baseball, when I grew up, was full of the standard stats, the box scores everybody knows. You know, runs, hits, errors, batted in. If you look at it now, that's not how they choose players. You know, ever since the analytics revolution of the Oakland A's, if you haven't read Moneyball by Michael Lewis, it's a good place to start. If you look at that, they use combination analytics that are far better in predictive power than those simple runs, hits, and errors. You're looking at things now like slugging percentage. And it just does a better job of prediction. So I view the state of academic predictive analytics to be extremely primitive. And one of my goals is one of these days I aspire for our analytics to be as good as Major League Baseball.
And you're right. What I showed you right now, the search capabilities are relatively generic for me as a student, aside from the fact that, you know, I personally just tried to get into a class, and we're building the search around that class and finding similar. The other one would be on the advanced search, that I can restrict the search to the classes I told you I was already interested in the My Academic Plan. The announcements could be extremely tailored. It's just the people using the Nudge-O-Matic right now haven't created those really granular profiles. But that's going to be the next phase of that, is we're going to start building that out. Because they all understand that nobody pays any attention to the announcements, right? Because they stay up there forever, they're not very dynamic, and they're not specific to the student. So that's the next step, is as we go out and start finding out, okay, what are the very specific things that you want this very specific set of students to know? And then we'll start doing that now that we've got the architecture to actually produce it.
So, like, the anthropology one wasn't because your daughter is an anthropology.
Correct. Right.
What you would hope to do.
Exactly. And what we want to do is then, we don't want to stop with this either. When we look at our online class schedule, again, that's something that drives me nuts. Because all we've done is we've taken the paper model and we've just put it in HTML, right? It probably does exactly the same thing. But if I, for instance, one of our colleges has a very large emeritus population. About a third of their headcount is all from classes offered in a very large retirement community called Laguna Woods. They see the exact same online class schedule that a student who has declared an intent to transfer to UC Berkeley. They both have to filter out all the stuff that's not relevant. So once we have this engine built, we're going to build our class schedule on top of it. So when they go into the class schedule, as long as they've authenticated, we know who they are. If you're the Laguna Woods resident who's taking the art classes, we'll start off and just show you that. If you're going to transfer to UC, we'll only show you UC transferable classes. Why give you the option to go in and make a bad decision? Now, obviously, if they want to expand that, and if the UC Berkeley person wants to take an art class for fun, of course we'll allow that. But again, it's that idea of giving them the focused piece of information.
We have other systems. Jim alluded that we use this Agile Scrum methodology. One of the strengths of that is that it's very flexible. You're doing things in short sprints, so that if you discover you're kind of going down a blind path, you're not committed to stay on it. Another way in which it's flexible is we built all this because we do view it as a platform with a service-oriented architecture, so it's very modular, very plug-and-play. So there are other things which, unfortunately, time doesn't allow today, but we have a system we're building called Dwidgets, which is an idea of data warehouse. What is that? Everybody's getting them now, and we've got one. But who says a data warehouse is just to pull data out of? Why isn't it something to put data into? Why can't you let students create data in various forms, ranging from just simple messages all the way up through mobile applications, and put that in there? And of course, there'll be a vetting process like the iPhone store or something. You know, I don't want any sexting apps or anything, you know, to go through. But if they do that, then all of these modules will be able to pass data. So if you subscribe to your fellow students' widgets that they've self-created, and just like YouTube, I view YouTube, for example, as an immense talent-finding engine. So the crowdsourcing filtering, you know, in the previous, I think Jeff Jarvis said, in the previous thing, the publishing model, the economics of publishing was that you had to filter then publish. Now you publish and then filter. So if we publish with these crowdsourcing tools and then we filter it down to things that have value, what has value for me may not have value for you, or vice versa. But we'll be able to watch what you're doing in the entire system, and one piece of the system will pass it in from another piece. I'm sorry, there's another question behind. Yes, ma'am.
If they are, we're not aware of it. We really did build it based on what we saw that students were really drawn to, things like Amazon and Netflix and Facebook and things like that. So there may be some people doing something out there. We don't want to say we're the only ones, but we haven't seen anything else in higher ed right now. And we are out of time. We'll be more than happy to stick around. I don't know if there's another group coming in, and I use my own laptop, so I need to tear this down. But we'll stick around as long as you want to. And we really appreciate you coming out. We know you had a lot of options, so thank you.